AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Another major storm causes California flooding and prompts evacuations. Santa Barbara County Sheriff Bill Brown.
The entire community of Montecito is ordered evacuated and evacuated now.
The order also applies to surrounding counties. CBS's Carter Evans in Santa Cruz.
California is drowning. The ground now is so saturated, water has nowhere to go but up. In the town of Felton, several homes now underwater as the San Lorenzo River overflows, prompting rescues in the fast-moving current. Mud-soaked hillsides are coming down. The San Lorenzo is just one of several rivers now at or above flood stage.
As first reported by CBS News, the Justice Department is reviewing classified documents found at President Biden's office at the Washington, D.C. think tank that bears his name. They date back into his time as vice president. CBS's Adriana Diaz.
Lawyers for President Biden were at the Biden Center clearing out office space because the president had some office space here in this building after his time as vice president. So they were clearing out office space, and inside a locked closet, they located classified material. They recognized the classified markings. As soon as they did, they said that they stopped their work and they contacted the White House counsel's office.
The U.S. House narrowly passes a package of rules governing its operations for the 118th Congress.
Vote, the yeas are 220, the nays are 213. The resolution is agreed to. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
It lays out the Republican majority's priorities, including a procedural tool used to remove the speaker. Mexican President Andres Manuel López Obrador is urging his visiting U.S. counterpart, President Biden, to put an end to what he calls decades of disdain by the United States towards Latin America and the Caribbean. Mr. Biden defends Washington's record.
Just in the last 15 years, we've spent billions of dollars in the hemisphere, tens of billions of dollars in the hemisphere.
1 week after Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin went into cardiac arrest and had to be resuscitated on the field, he's been transferred from a Cincinnati hospital to one in Buffalo. CBS's Matt Piper.
Damar Hamlin's doctors at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center say the 24-year-old was moved from critical to good condition in the morning, clearing him to get on a plane to head to a hospital in Buffalo.
We felt that it was safe and proper to help get him back to the greater Buffalo area.
They say Hamlin was actually up and walking Friday, but was really up during Sunday's Bills game and subsequent big win.
When the opening kickoff was run back, he jumped up and down, got out of his chair, set, I think, every alarm off in the ICU in the process.
Doctors say it's still too early to comment on the potential cause of his cardiac arrest.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. Weakening Governor Evers' powers appears to be the goal of Wisconsin's Republican lawmakers who are pushing to get several constitutional amendments on the April 4th ballot. One requires the legislature approve how federal money is spent. GOP lawmakers repeatedly clashed with Governor Evers over how to allocate those monies during the pandemic. Another amendment changes the way people accused of a crime get out on bail. This will require court officials consider things like public safety and the person's previous record before setting bail. If the amendment passed, they changed the Constitution and therefore can't be vetoed by the governor. Meanwhile, Governor Evers told WISN he's absolutely not in favor of the amendment giving the legislature the power to spend federal money, saying, quote, "You think about what happened during this pandemic. You have a legislature that didn't come into session for 300 days and we got the money out the door," unquote. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Interesting day. Day one of the GOP House Clown Show. They got the rules passed through. Was kind of held out a little bit of hope that maybe there'd be a handful of Republicans who are going, I don't know, bad idea giving the most radical of the bunch the keys to the car. I don't know. But hey, it went through. We now have the weakest speaker. Going to be fun to see how they bang him around. But the Republicans showed their hand right from the start. Remember the 4 years under the former president, under 45? What was the only thing they got done? Yeah, that tax bill. Yeah, that tax bill. Because you got the only thing that Republicans truly care about, the tax fetish. That's all they care about. It's all that's in the ears. It's all that's, because understand, when a Republican allows the billionaire to cheat on their taxes, they get another donation. You thought I was going to go with their wings to get into heaven, didn't you? No, they get a tax. They get a donation. And that's what they're doing as we speak. The Republicans are holding their little clown show under the guise of the, and you got to love the names. They are so much better at naming things than the Democrats. So much better. The Family and Small Business Protection Act. Uh-huh. Because they're going to protect families and small businesses from the evil, evil IRS. Because if you listen to the spiels that they gave today on the House floor, that somehow Biden was able to hire 87,000 agents, you know, yesterday. And they're out there marauding, probably teaming up with MS-13. Maybe even hired. I didn't hear a Republican say it, but I wouldn't be surprised that they believed it, that they hired MS-13 to come and be IRS agents. I'm sure that somewhere that will come up. But if you listen to the rhetoric, they hired 87,000 agents and they're coming for your children. Because according to them, they're going to attack the poor. Now, what's interesting is they're not absolutely wrong in looking at the data from the former guy and, you know, what happened. When the former guy went and cut the number of IRS agents down to the lowest number per return, probably since the agency began, where did they go? They went after the low-hanging fruit. They went after the poor people who were claiming the earned income tax credits and that kind of stuff. Because, hey, we gotta get something. We got to go through and we got to turn things. They stopped going after rich people. They stopped going after the really complicated returns, which is why the Biden administration and Democrats have said, hey, we need to hire more qualified IRS agents to go and audit these really complicated returns. We need to get people who understand the code and understand this isn't going to be easy. There's no way they're going to find 87,000 IRS people tomorrow. This is a build for the future. This is over the next decade. But if you listen to the sky is falling people, that he's already hired them and that they're marching for the children. They're coming for your pennies and the sofa cushions. But the Family and Small Business Protection Act, more like the Tax Cheat Protection Act. Now remember, the former guy stood on a stage and said that, he didn't pay taxes because he's smart. And a bunch of his minions went, hey, he's smart, while they paid their taxes. And now we know, because we've seen some of Trump's returns, he didn't pay anything. He is smart. He got you. He got me. He got us to pay his taxes. And he got a percentage of the population to applaud him and vote for him. And to vote for people who gave him even more tax breaks. Because that's all the Republicans accomplished in the 4 years under the former guy. So it's interesting to me. Now, one of the things that came up during the House floor discussions was, under the Reagan administration, and one of the things that Reagan advocated for was a ratio of one IRS agent for every 2,000 returns. We're nowhere near that today. It's, like I said, at one of the lowest levels ever. And it's one of these moments where you go, if you're overworked, underpaid, and understaffed, what ends up happening? You then go after the easy stuff. And the wealthy are very happy with that. The wealthy are thrilled by the fact that nobody's coming for them. And when they do, they don't have the resources to go very long. The audits are generally light because, they don't want to get tied up in long legal battles and long court battles because the wealthy, they have the resources to fight this stuff out. Now, I find it interesting that the party who talks about debt and deficits, the party who talks about spending money wisely, on their first day, going to hike the deficit by some $114 billion. Because the revenue that was going to be created per year out of auditing the very wealthy who pay zero, like Donald Trump, who pays zero, that was going to go into the coffers. Now, what you're going to have is you're going to have people going, but Rick, they spend that money in other places. Yeah, the Caymans. and what you're seeing is you're seeing the wealthy getting much cozier with offshore tax havens, getting much cozier in places like the Cayman Islands or Ireland or places where, you can hide a little money. Find it interesting. But the Republicans are there to protect those folks. And I want to know your thoughts. Are you okay with this? Now, look, I don't want working class people to be audited. I don't want people making $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year to be audited every year. And they're not going to be. This is a scare tactic. The Biden administration has said, as a percentage, things are not going to increase above where they are from people making less than $400,000 a year. We should want an enforcement arm to make sure that the taxes that we pay are paid by everyone. Because at the end of the day, what's happened over the last, 40, 50 years is the tax burden has shifted from the very wealthy to the very poor and to the working class. And we've created massive debt. I'm not someone who believes in debt. It's one of these things. It's just incredible to me that we've been allowed to grow this debt as large as it is when we have such an enormous billionaire class. Because we're told that if we give them all this money, they're going to use it wisely. If we give corporate America all this money, they're going to use it wisely. And what we find out what they do with it is they buy their stocks back. Huge. I think it was like $1.3 trillion last year in stock buybacks. That's $1.3 trillion in money that was supposed to be used for a productive use. New equipment, higher salaries for workers, lower prices, whatever it was supposed to go to something other than lining the pockets of the very wealthy and the shareholders, but that's all it's doing. It's corporate America saying we have no productive use for this money other than we're going to hoard it. And no one in government is moving to stop that, especially not the Republicans. If you saw it today, nope. Now, fortunately, this isn't going to go anywhere. It's going to die in the Senate. But it does speak to their priorities. And it is another attack on working people. And what's amazing and what Republicans have done masterfully is they've gotten working people, people making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to go, you know what, I'm against taxes. Taxes are bad. And every time they hear the word taxes, they foam at the mouth like a Pavlovian dog and think that, you know, what their tax liability is and what, you know, Elon Musk's should be are the same, and they're not. There was a point in this country, you know, when we paid for roads and bridges, we paid for education, we paid for health care, we had investments in the future, and we didn't have massive debt and deficits. But we also didn't have gazillionaires. And we had a tax code that had a top marginal tax rate of 92%. And you know what those people at the top did? They didn't give that money to the government. They paid higher wages to their workers. They invested in healthcare facilities and educational facilities and libraries. They invested it in communities. They didn't hoard it. And this comes back to the question, what kind of an economy do we want? What kind of an economy do working people need? It's my thought. I want to hear yours. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. I want to hear your thoughts. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Supreme Court case coming up on Tuesday. Could have massive, painful ramifications. Right back. Stick around. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments. And you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs. In the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So more than 7,000 nurses went on strike today in New York City. Members of the New York State Nurses Association, affiliated with National Nurses United, fighting for a fair contract and to improve patient care. Something we should be standing behind and standing with. And I want to throw a shout out to them that we stand in support with them. Let's quick go to the phone lines. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing today?
We're doing okay. How about yourself?
I am doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I just think it is totally amazing how they have their base brainwashed, thinking that taxes are bad because, of course, they all believe that at some point they're going to be billionaires themselves.
Yeah. No, I see. Here's the thing. And, you know, I have a friend whose parents were very wealthy, and you know, back during World War II, they were happy to pay the 92% tax rate because it was an investment in the country. We're not that country anymore.
No, we're not. And I just had an experience a few days ago with one of these ding-a-lings where they were having a hysterical fit, and I said, well, congratulations. And they were like, what? I said, you make over $400,000. No, I don't. I said, then shut up, because it doesn't apply to you. So
It's the same, but it's the same thing with the death tax, you know, the inheritance tax. You know, I had people who were saying the same thing. You know, I don't want to pay taxes when I die. You're worth $11 million somewhere. You work in a minimum wage job. You got $11 million I don't know about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I have never in my life seen such an ignorant bunch of people. And I mean literally ignorant, because they have no clue about anything and how it applies to them.
Yeah. Fun times. Fun times. That's why we need to get out there and educate them, Alice. Appreciate the thoughts.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. But here's the thing. And look, you know, the reality is this is where working people need to come back together. The right has done such a masterful job of misinformation and disinformation and feeding, you know, you're gonna pay taxes when you die. And you go, I hope so. Because that would mean I'd have $11 million. That means I would have a lot of money. I don't. And what's amazing to me is we don't see the real attacks on us every day. Right now, there's a Supreme Court case that is going to be heard on Tuesday. We talked about it last week a little bit. It is the Glacier Northwest Incorporated versus International Brotherhood of Teamsters Local Union 174. We talked about it last week. It was, you know, you had like 46 cement truck workers. They work for this cement company who came to work. The union and the company were negotiating. The negotiations broke down in the morning. The union said, hey, we're going on strike. The workers came in, said, hey, we're done. We're going out on the picket line. The trucks are running. They're out on the line. There's cement in it. You better deal with it. The company had no contingency plans, had no idea what to do. And as I said before, they probably didn't even know how to operate the trucks. So they were left in a lurch. Now, this is their problem. This is what happens when you don't negotiate in good faith. This is what happens when these kind of talks break down. And this is how this has gone for years. So what this company has done is they sued. They said, well, you know, we had to waste all that concrete and we had to, you know, dispose of it. And we're going to sue the union for the cost of this concrete. Now, that's all new. The court in Washington State threw it out saying, you know, this isn't the purview of the law. This is, you know, part of what labor law is. There's nothing here for you. There's no way for you to win this. But they're taking it to the Supreme Court. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court that out of whole cloth came up with the Janus decision. You know, the Supreme Court that you've got Samuel Alito, who has openly stated his disdain for organized labor and organized workers. A Supreme Court that is basically in the pocket of the Chamber of Commerce. When the Chamber of Commerce puts a brief in on a case, an amicus brief, I think the study said like almost 3/4 of the time the court sides with the Chamber of Commerce. That's how in the pocket the Roberts Court is in corporate America. Working people get just pummeled at the court. And you go, well, what's the big deal? You know, it's just a little bit of cement. Understand, this is opening the door. If the Roberts Court does what I think they're going to do, they're going to make new law. They are going to, from the high bench, they are going to overturn decades of decided law. They're going to overturn the written law, and they're going to make sure that corporate America can use the NLRB and use labor law and the courts to stop people from striking by saying, look, hey, you know, we lost money. And first it's going to start like this. It's going to start with, hey, you know, we lost cement. You walked out and the cement went bad. Hey, you're going to pay for this. And then it's going to get to, well, you know, that cement could have been poured somewhere and we could have charged somebody. So we lost profits because of you. So we're going to sue for lost profits. They've already tried it in some places. And there will be a chilling effect across the entire movement. Now understand, right now you're starting to see an uptick in people using their right to strike, using their ability to strike. And understand, corporate America, not happy with that. None whatsoever. Now understand, the law right now, as it is, says, look, you know, corporations can sue and recover damages if there's vandalism, if it's deliberate sabotage. There was none of that. But they're trying to expand it, trying to make it bigger. And understand, the Roberts, Alito, Gorsuch, Thomas Court would love nothing more than to put workers and their unions in their place. This is one of those things. Now, this could expand into farm workers, warehouse workers. Hey, you know, it's Black Friday. We're going to lose profits. Hey, we've got to deliver that produce. If the produce goes bad, we're going to charge you for all of that. And then you know there's going to be tons of shenanigans played. And then you're going to know that they're going to continue to file frivolous lawsuits just to burn up dues dollars, just to keep the union spinning their wheels to ensure that they're not out there using their resources to organize new members or to represent their current members. This is bad stuff. But it's about putting workers and their unions back in their place. It's about silencing that voice, that one tool, that one tactic, the only tactic that workers have, the right to withhold their labor. And you go, well, how can they do that? How can they stop me from going on strike? They're going to sue you now. Look at in Illinois what they did to the teachers. If you quit your job as a teacher, they pull your license. They were pulling that for a while. There's going to be a point down the road. Mark my word. If they get their way, if they are able to continue to use the Supreme Court to silence the voice of workers, to silence the unity of workers, the ability for us working people to use the only tool we have, the only power, and that's the power to withhold your labor. If they take that away, what's left? How do you then fight for better wages, hours, conditions? How do you make lives better? Because we've been going through 50 years of attacks, 50 years of suppressing wages, of shifting benefits from the employer onto the employee, from stealing pension benefits. We've been seeing 50 years of massive redistribution of wealth and working people getting the short end of the stick at every turn. And yet here it is. The next step in using the law against working people. The next step in using the Supreme Court against workers. Now, I have people go, but, you know, and again, I come back to this political divide. This is a Republican issue. Republicans hate working people. It's glaringly apparent. Look at the policies they push. Look at the Supreme Court justices they appoint. And look at the decisions they move on. It's always anti-worker. It's always on the side of money, on the side of power, on the side of corporations, on the side of the elite. Yet their rhetoric is, oh, they care. If you listen to them today on the House floor, oh, boy, they were just dripping with how much they care about families and small businesses. And the reality is they could give a tinker's damn. You know who they care about? They care about the rich and powerful. They care about the billionaires. They care about big corporations, the ones who line their campaign coffers. This will be, if it goes the wrong way, and I got to tell you, I have no faith in the Supreme Court to leave the law alone. Remember John Roberts, Mr. Balls and Strikes? Believes in stare decisis, believes in decided law, and yet this court has been overturning precedent for years. Basically just making stuff up. Because they can. The question is, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to respond? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Corrigan's going to be here from Teamsters Local 1932 to share some thoughts on how this will affect his members and a victory at Amazon, and maybe how...
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CBS News Brief. Flood and mudslide concerns in storm-soaked California. Santa Barbara County Sheriff Bill Brown.
We have evacuation orders that are in place for the entire community of Montecito, numerous parts of Carpinteria, Summerland area.
As first reported by CBS News, the Justice Department is reviewing documents marked as classified that were found at President Biden's office at a Washington, D.C. think tank and date back to his time as vice president. CBS's Adriana Diaz.
Once it does conclude, once he's presented what he knows to the Attorney General will then decide if further investigation is warranted, be that an FBI investigation or possibly appointing a special counsel.
On Kevin McCarthy's first day as Speaker, Republicans approved their rules package, 220 to 213. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise.
Today starts that process of fixing what's broken in Washington so that Washington can finally start working for the people of this country who are struggling.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Fuel suppliers have more time to catch up on deliveries in Wisconsin slowed down by bad weather. Governor Evers issued an emergency order Friday. It's the second one in the month's time. Weeks of cold and snowy weather have slowed delivery of home heating fuel like heating oil and propane. Look for Governor Evers' cabinet appointees to get confirmation votes in the weeks and months to come. That's what Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu tells the Journal Sentinel. Senate Republicans largely skipped routine confirmation votes during Evers' first term. That's left 185 appointments unconfirmed, including key cabinet positions. In sports, we may have seen the last of Aaron Rodgers as a Green Bay Packer. Commentators are speculating about his retirement after last night's loss to the Lions. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates.
Mitch McConnell did make a public statement, right? After he voted to acquit.
No, nothing says the president can't be prosecuted.
Set the example for your caucus.
Convince your caucus as to why the man is not fit to serve. How do you not use your leadership? Say, you guys, this is crazy. We can't do this, and here is exactly why. Because now of the two major political parties, one of them is under the thumb of a fascist insurrectionist.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, between the Federal Reserve raising interest rates to create more unemployment and the Supreme Court dreaming up new laws attacking workers, you gotta wonder, where do we go? I mean, look, Tuesday when the Supreme Court hears this case, this Glaciers case, the chilling effect across organized labor will be
will be painful. Because again, as I said, the only power workers have is that to withhold their labor, to cross their arms and march their feet. And once you penalize that, once you basically criminalize that, wow. Now I look what's going on out on the West Coast, and there was a great story on Friday that we didn't get to. Amazon was in the process of firing a young woman who was a union activist organizer, and the workers all came together, you know, wore signs, wore buttons, and she got back to work. It shows that solidarity works. And you know what they did? They threatened the strike if they didn't replace her. This is the kind of stuff that scares the you-know-what out of corporate America. And here to share some thoughts on what it took and maybe share some of the details that I'm missing. I've asked my good friend Randy Corrigan to come talk with us. Randy is the president or the secretary treasurer and principal officer at Teamsters Local 1932. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rick. I appreciate it. I always make time for you guys.
So walk me through what happened with Sarah Fee and Amazon. Walk me through, was she fired? Was she put on administrative leave? What's the story there?
She was put on administrative leave after a very minor conversation with a union avoidance individual, union buster, essentially, at the Amazon facility that she works at there in San Bernardino. And they put her on administrative leave pending, you know, obviously discipline and termination. And this is the same group many may have read about that went on strike in October, walked off the job in August. I have had, you know, action, direct action after direct action, withheld their labor in very strategic fashion to prove to Amazon that they're valuable and that their work is valuable in the area. And they obviously all rallied behind Sarah in that particular situation. And she was put back to work on Friday.
Now, that is a huge victory and a sign of solidarity and something that had to scare the you-know-what out of Amazon and really, you know, shocks across corporate America. Because if working people can show that kind of solidarity and stand together, well, the pitchforks may come out at some point. And well, the wealthy not thrilled about it, which is why, you know, this Supreme Court case that's going to be heard on Tuesday is so important, because if this case goes the way I believe it will, one of the tools that would have been used to help get Sarah back to work would be off the table.
Yeah, you know, it clearly shows that once again, corporate America is using the judicial system, the National Labor Relations Act, to try to obviously restrict workers' ability to use what power that they have. And it's just a reminder that we shouldn't be depending, we being workers and obviously advocates for working people, shouldn't be dependent upon that system, that we need to encourage more and more workers to do exactly what these workers did in San Bernardino, these Amazon workers did and around Sarah, which is, if you do this, we will do that. And that is very clearly saying this direct action that we are going to engage in is going to, you know, we're doing it as a, you know, for solidarity and to send a message that an injury to one is an injury to all. And so I hear what you said. I slightly disagree in a sense that I don't think it's the end of the world. And here's why. I think it's terrible. I think it's disgusting. I think that they're going to go that way. I think that we have seen the Supreme Court. We've seen what the laws have done in the last 40 years. And I think it's a constant reminder to us that we have to literally get back to more direct action that actually created the law to begin with.
Right.
That, you know, what created the Wagner Act was this sort of activity and this sort of action of workers engaging. And then finally, you know, commerce said, OK, we got to come up with a fair set of rules for workers. And I think I agree with you. I think that the Supreme Court is going to work against us on this and make it punishable, something that was normally preempted by the National Labor Relations Act. Why would they even entertain this? This is something that the Supreme Court should just bounce and say, we're not going to hear it. It's preempted under the National Labor Relations Act. Of course, they're going to hear it because we know that that's what we're getting with the Supreme Court. But it's also a reminder that workers have to do more of what these workers did when they surrounded themselves around Sarah. And that is to take direct action. Will these work corporations fight back? Sure they will. And so we're going to have to, you know, do more and more of this. And workers are ready to do this. We're seeing this You know, in lots of places all over the country where workers are willing to take this sort of action.
No, I'm with you, but and I'm curious where you disagree with me. But, you know, if this goes the way I think it is, and they use this as a tool to go after workers and their organizations, you know, financially to go after, you know, first it's going to start with, oh, we lost some cement or we lost some produce. And eventually, you know, they're going to go after lost profits and future profits and all kinds of things. Or just to get you guys spinning your wheels, spending money on legal fees and all of that. So, I just see this as an attack tool to suppress strikes. But I'm curious where you disagree.
I agree that it is it's an attack tool as you described it. But where I disagree is I don't think it should scare labor, nor should I think that it should slow us down from encouraging workers to withhold their labor. I think that maybe do we have to be a little bit more guarded in how we're doing it, but we absolutely should accelerate the fact that we're doing it. And if the Supreme Court rules in which we think the way they are, that is a reason to accelerate these issues and to say, and to do and have more direct action and say, well, you're going to do this. Guess what we're going to do as a result of it. We're going to create more disruption as a result. We're going to withhold our labor more and more because you guys are just trying to tighten the belt on us legally. That's the part I disagree in.
No. I know how I it should go, but my fear is it becomes a chilling effect because of now we're going to act defensively. We got to worry about, hey, can the coffers, can we afford it? Are we going to end up going broke? You know, that's my concern is that I know it will have a chilling effect.
Well, hey, you bring up a great point. And I think, you know, as a principal officer myself, you know, it's something that you've got to balance, right? How much of the legal cost going to be? Well, there's a point where if we keep being scared in the labor movement into a corner on this stuff, then we're afraid to do anything. You know, we've been paralyzed by a lot of this stuff in the last 50 years, and it's created a space of being inactive. And so, you know, it's almost like, you know, keep being paralyzed. Then there's going to be nothing left. Or let's get to work. Let's spark direct action. Let's move some workers into the street and let's take control of whatever industry needs to be taken control of by doing it in the way that did it, that built the industry to begin with.
No, could this be a moment, though? I know I say this every time there's another attack, another, you know, another cut, another death of 1,000 paper cuts. That is this the one that makes people finally go, this is a bridge too far, and does what you're talking about, more direct action, more people waking up to the reality that, you know, we've been getting screwed for 40 years.
I think it, you know, sometimes you don't ever know what that breaking point is. If you go back in history and you see when general strikes happened or, you know, when moments in time were created, you know, they were not predictable. And I don't think this one's predictable either. It's another layer that's getting stacked on the situation to what you just said. In other words, it's another thing that's happening where workers are going, how many times are you going to cut out my feet from underneath me? And it brings people closer to resolution on what they need to do and to not depend on, let's say, the National Labor Relations Act or the Supreme Court to bail them out or any system like that. What we know in this country that's worked for over 100 years is workers depending on one another, workers in solidarity, doing what they have to do. And when you don't break that down, you're typically going to win.
Yeah. Now, on the other side of this, I wanted to get your thoughts. Is there a possibility, if this goes the way that I think we both believe it will, that this would work to the advantage of workers, that they could sue corporations for damages? Look, you got fired illegally, you got fired unjustly, you got put out, you know, for one reason or another. Could you sue them for punitive damages outside of lost wages? Because this is basically what this case is saying.
I would say absolutely. Remember, if you're going to live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. And if you're going to take away the preemption on an issue, then the flip side of that preemption works on the side that you just pointed out. Absolutely, we need to press that issue, right? But not depend on it. What we need to depend on is that worker solidarity. And that, once again, direct action over and over again over the last 100 years is what has driven good policy. Not waiting on someone to create some good policy, it's really been some sort of direct action then created a response from government or elected officials or commerce or whomever it was. And then they enacted a policy to deal with whatever that direct action was. And I think that it just puts us closer to that space. And clearly, I agree with you. I think we should immediately challenge it. On the flip side, no different than challenging right to work, the way you can challenge right to work and allow a state to have car check recognition. And if you're going to allow this preemption to exist, and that's where the Supreme Court's got a slippery slope here. You know, it's probably fair to say that they're going to have a narrow ruling in here, because the wider they rule in a negative space, the better our argument is to wipe away some preemptions we want wiped away.
Yeah, my fear in this, Randy, is, as we said a moment ago, really the only true power a worker has is the right to fold their arms and march their feet, to withhold their labor. We've seen in Illinois, for instance, where teachers were threatened with having their license pulled if they dared quit a job. I fear we're going to head to a point to where, leaving employment, stopping work, withholding your labor will become so costly that we end up getting into horrible conditions that people can't get out of. And in under the guise of a legal structure, that's what's concerning to me.
I think that's a good fear. And I think that any confrontation or situation that we get into in the future, we should always balance that and respect that and understand that there is the possibility for the end result to be an employer taking the extreme position and you having to deal with that. But also we can't be driven into a situation where we decide to allow the fear of that to prevent us from making it happen. I do fear, though, that labor leaders, and I'll say it, labor leaders that are too restricted by the legal sort of menagerie of the system and kind of sometimes afraid of their own shadows, that fear will paralyze part of what we do. I think that, let's be real, Rick, that is there. There's a lot of elected individuals that sometimes, you're convinced not to do things because there's every reason why not to do it versus looking at the reasons to do it.
Yeah, good
and
point.
You and I have talked about this subject before many times in the past. And I think that this is one of those moments where, again, direct action, and it is an attack on direct action. So I guess we got to take it square on, right?
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Randy Corgan. He's Teamsters Local 1932 Secretary, Treasurer, and Principal Officer. You can check out their website, teamsters1932.org. We'll get links out on social media. I got an email from Brian in Chicago, listening on WCPT AM 820, who asks about the UPS, possibility of a UPS strike, and what it would mean for workers there. If this were to go into effect. And, I've had this happen, this question come up a bunch of times about, if there is a strike, and I'm not advocating for one, we don't know what's going to happen yet. They're at the table, obviously. Nobody wants it to happen, but it's an arrow in the quiver. But I don't want this to be one of those things that would have a chilling effect. I'm curious if you have a thought.
I do. I think that, in some circles, it'll argue that it limits. In others, I think that it's going to be full steam ahead. And I think that we have to approach this, and specifically with UPS, there's obviously a lot of buildup around that contract right now. There's a lot of changes that have happened in that industry in the last decade. You work in that industry. In the last two decades, it's shifted tremendously. The transportation industry, the goods movement system, LTL, package, freight, all of that stuff. And I think that the buildup around the awareness on this contract for July, the employer will try to use this as a tool, as a chilling effect with the membership. And hopefully what happens is the membership see right through that, recognize that you have the right to do that. I personally believe that this union will make very good decisions when it comes to that subject, and we will make sure that we move in the right direction. There's a lot of elected officials within the union itself that are connected clearly to something this large, with more than 300,000 of our members connected to it. And how do I think it's going to affect us? I think that we just have to deal with whatever that decision is. And when the decision comes down, we got to make sure we're as creative as possible to make sure that we have the right to withhold our labor when the time is right.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, while we're talking about withholding your labor, that's a worker-centric position. You know, I look at Amazon, who seems to be moving in a direction of everyone being their own boss and being a gig worker, being an independent contractor, which is another issue that I think we have to deal with. And it's something that I think, you know, the right and you know, there are people in our political system very happy to move in that direction. I'm curious, the movement towards getting those people as employees and fighting back, especially when you're talking about UPS, because as Amazon is growing their delivery system, they're doing it with a gig model.
Yeah, and these corporations dumping their responsibilities, whether they be on independent contractors or contractors that are handling the delivery of product and or third party operations, is, you know, proliferated massively in the last three decades. That expansion of the industry operating that way has led to higher injuries. It's led to higher turnover. It's led to a number of things, including higher profits for these companies in the industry, which ultimately is what everybody's looking at. And they're not caring, they're not taking value in the workforce itself.
Yep.
As a result, you have a frustrated workforce. That's why 70% of the population wants to be in a union today, as the polls clearly show, because employers have not taken care of their workforce, and they have devalued the importance of that job and basically almost looked down upon individuals that are doing this hard work their entire career. And basically, you're not worth, you know, you don't have the value to be able to retire in dignity or have great health care or, you know, be able to provide for your family or just have a very simple middle class lifestyle. So
that's why I think the organizing going on around Amazon, the organizing going on around places like Starbucks, the UPS contract, I think, is so important. I think these things are so important that you know, we've got to stay up on them and fight in a direction that makes lives better and keep hammering that message. You know, the one that I got as a young kid, union job, better life. It's that simple for me.
Yeah, and we need to get back to that. You know, we need to make sure that our awareness, you know, first of all, it's our responsibility as union members ourselves to be positive about our organization. And obviously the trajectory of life being a union member is completely different than being non-union. That responsibility falls on all of us. And we failed the last couple generations, have not done a good enough job of making sure that the new generation coming in understands it at the right level. That, number two, you know, making sure we're engaging with the community, making sure we're building the right partnerships, making sure that we're going to city council meetings and school board meetings, and we're building very robust relationships inside of our natural community that we live and work in, so that there's familiarity with the union and the environment in which it provides versus it just being some obscure thing that corporate America talks about.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right, Randy. I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Good on you guys for getting out there organizing. Good on the people at Amazon for standing up and fighting for Sarah Fee. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you for having us on.
Good stuff. Randy Corrigan, Principal Officer, Secretary Treasurer there at Teamsters Local 1932. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Do national security concerns outweigh the right of workers to form a union? That question was being debated on this day in labor history. The year was 2003. The head of the Transportation Security Administration, James Loy, made the case that collective bargaining would be an impediment to the war on terrorism. He signed an order that prohibited unionization by passenger and baggage screeners. The move was just one of several that eroded federal workers' rights in the name of national security in the aftermath of 9/11. The TSA was founded in the months after the 9/11 attacks by the Bush administration. Prior to the TSA, screening was done by private contractors run by the airlines. With the new organization, more than 45,000 screeners became part of the federal workforce. Massachusetts Senator Teddy Kennedy disagreed with the Bush administration's position that these workers could not join a union. He released a statement saying, "It's not Homeland Security, it's union busting." The TSA workers did not give up their fight to join a union. For the better part of a decade, they continued to organize and make their case. In 2011, the workers voted to become part of the American Federation of Government Employees. It was the largest union election by federal workers in United States history. There are limitations to the union, however, such as the screeners cannot go on strike, but the union can advocate for safe and fair workplace conditions. When the union was finally recognized, president of AFGE John Gage issued a statement. He declared, "Today marks the recognition of a fundamental human right for 40,000 patriotic federal employees who have been disenfranchised since the inception of the agency. Today, nearly 16,000 screeners have joined the union." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know that frame, union job, better life. You know, as a young kid, I got that front and center. Because like I said, in the past, you know, the neighbor got a union job at Ford. And immediately their lives got better. Food at the end of the month. Kids had better clothes. They got secondhand bikes. Eventually got a secondhand car. Eventually moved out of the projects altogether. But right in front of your very eyes, you saw their lives get better. Union job, better life, simple. And we're at a moment right now. This is an interesting time. That UPS contract that we talked about in the last segment, there's an opportunity. And there's an opportunity for the Teamsters and Sean O'Brien, the new president, to really recreate what a middle-class job, a prosperous middle-class job looks like. There's an opportunity to put, you know, Sean O'Brien's name up there next to Jimmy Hoffa, or even past Jimmy Hoffa. You know, when my grandparents were in the work world, Jimmy Hoffa negotiated the National Master Freight Agreement, which created made truck driving jobs a solidly upper middle class job, professionalized the industry. And over the years, through bad policy deregulation, through horrible, horrible attacks on organized labor, what was once a very prosperous industry is now, just another job. O'Brien has the opportunity to put himself up there on the mantle with Walter Reuther and Hoffa and Murray and John L. Lewis and the rest of them, by delivering a contract that's going to ensure that every person makes a living wage. One of the things that UPS did during the pandemic that's disgraceful is they were paying their inside people, the people who load the package cars, the four-hour casuals that come in, the armies of the four-hour workers that they've got, the part-timers, they were paying them like $24 an hour to get them to come in during the pandemic. And then when the pandemic ended, they dropped them back to $14 an hour. And you know, Friday, you're working for $24. Monday, they snatch $10 an hour from you. And it was one of those things where that's a reasonable, respectable wage. And what the unions, from what I'm told, is doing is, look, you can afford this. UPS had a couple $1 billion in stock buybacks. When you stop and think about the billions of dollars they spent on stock buybacks, what kind of raises, what kind of wealth could have gone to the working people who created that wealth? And O'Brien's a fighter. He's a guy, from what I'm told, he's a fighter. He's going to get on in there and he's going to fight for it. And make the lives of those workers better. The argument's been for too long UPS has had it easy, and O'Brien, from what I'm told, the guy who's going to right the ship, going to fix the problems that have been there for so long, And this contract is how you do this. Because the membership is there. The membership wants it. I have not seen this kind of energy around a leader in the years that I've been a member. Haven't. Maybe when James R. Hoffa took over, there was that energy at the beginning. This is an interesting moment. Gonna be interesting to see what this summer brings to us. You got the UAW contract, you've got the freight companies contracts are up, and the big UPS. There's an opportunity to revive the middle class, the working class of this country. And people like Sean O'Brien are the guys who are gonna lead that. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.